Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, live from the Auto Farm Studios, set to get this Wednesday edition off and rolling, and we are going to talk a lot of Major League Baseball. Talked a lot of football on the show yesterday. Today it's baseball. We're going to talk to Dakota Cincinnatus, manager of the Helper American Legion squad. They picked up two wins in the opening round of the state championship tournament this past Monday. That means they'll travel to Pleasant Grove on Friday. They'll take on Harriman in what is now a double elimination tournament to decide the state champion. Helper, they look good against Mountain View, a 14-1 win and a 2-0 win. So we'll talk to Coach Cincinnatus about those two victories and what lies ahead. That's coming up a little bit later on in the show. And some good news coming out of Major League Baseball. Some big names, especially with the Washington Nationals, such as Juan Soto, finally able to report to the Nationals. The World Series champs will get their young slugger back tomorrow. He's been sitting out after being around someone that tested positive for COVID-19. A lot of names within the Washington Nationals that have had to stay away from the team. Juan Soto, Howie Kendricks, Victor Robles. I mean, these were some big names for the Washington Nationals that have been missing or sitting out as far as the team is concerned now, just 8 days away from the start of the Major League season. So we'll talk Major League Baseball. Also, the ramifications of the Atlanta Braves adding Yasiel Puig, who will most certainly be the starting right fielder for this team, putting what I believe is a star-studded outfield. Ender Inciarte, Ronald Acuna, now Yasiel Puig. This helps Atlanta quite a bit. I don't believe that this move could be overstated. If Puig hits a 260, he's a 277 career slugger. If he hits 260, he's adding a component to this Braves squad that we didn't know how they would replace it when Nick Markakis opted out, especially if Freddie Freeman decides to opt out. So, ultimately, I think this is big news. We'll take a look at that as well. We'll be joined by former Major League pitcher Bill Lasky. That'll be on the show today. Let's take a look at the national headlines. Some news out of the NFL, and today the Tennessee Titans have agreed to terms with Derrick Henry on a 4-year, $50 million deal. You wondered what the market would look like for Derrick Henry? 4 years, $50 million, 25.5 of that 50 is guaranteed, and the Titans have announced that the deal is official, but they didn't include the terms. In one offseason, the Titans have now reached deals with Henry and Ryan Tannehill, and they paid Tannehill big money, and they give Derrick Henry big money as well, because this is $12.5 million per season. He's now the fifth highest paid running back. He'll trail Christian McCaffrey, Ezekiel Elliott, Le'Veon Bell, and David Johnson, and you can almost be certain that the Bell and Johnson deal will be done at the end of the season. I was curious how the Titans would handle this. I was curious as to what Derrick Henry would accept. Again, the running back market in the NFL right now, it's so wishy-washy. Yes, Christian McCaffrey just signed the largest deal for a running back in league history. He's making $16 million a season. He's young. He's coming off a terrific season. Ezekiel Elliott's contract has been set. Le'Veon Bell's going into year two of a massive deal with the Jets. And then the David Johnson deal, which just looks dismal at best at this particular time. That's big money going to players that are borderline expendable, right? And then you have Dalvin Cook holding out for more money in Minnesota. And so the Henry deal for me was extremely interesting because that's going to not necessarily reset the market, but it does set a precedent because not everyone is going to get Christian McCaffrey money. The running back position is so much different than the quarterback spot. The next big quarterback deal, it will rival something of the $140 million guaranteed that Patty Mahomes got. forget about the $500 million contract. It's all about the guarantee. So that $140 million, whoever signs next, be it Dak Prescott or whoever, you're going to be working against that $140 million guaranteed. It's not going to be the case with the running back spot. Derrick Henry's $12.5 million average. I think it's good news for the Minnesota Vikings. I think it's good news for Dalvin Cook. This guy wants to be paid like a top five running back in the NFL. 12.5, I think it's reasonable. Really, I do. Will Henry reach the four-year, $50 million deal? No, he's not going to be in Tennessee for 4 years. I'm telling you right now, the way this guy is used and the amount of punishment that he takes, the way he runs, he will not last 4 years with Tennessee. I think it's a great deal for both sides. Now, while Derrick Henry got his payday, Dak Prescott did not. Dak and the Cowboys unable to come to an agreement on a long-term deal, which means he will play for the franchise tender, which is set at $31 million. It's a good payday for Dak. It's obviously not what he wanted, but I do believe he has the Cowboys' flexibility as well. And I don't know what the negotiations were made up of. I don't know exactly what Dak wants. Again, you have to look at the market, and if you think that Dak Prescott and his agent believe they're worth Patrick Mahomes' money, it's just simply not the case. Now, the Cowboys put out an offer that was $34.5 million per year, which would have been the second highest average for a quarterback behind Russell Wilson. And on guarantee money, it would have been equal to what the Rams gave Jared Goff of $110 million. Now, the difference between Goff and Dak was a fourth-round pick. Jared Goff has won playoff games, gone to the Super Bowl, and was the number one overall pick. So you got to look at this in terms of fairness. I think the Cowboys pretty much handled this the way they needed to handle it. And now Dak can play on the franchise tag. But again, it goes back to the conversation yesterday. That's the difference from the NFL and the NBA. Superstars rarely leave teams because you have control of the superstar for additional years after that contract is gone, if you so wish, with the franchise tag. Now, Dak is not going to be the only NFL player on the tag. AJ Green of the Cincinnati Bengals will also play on the franchise tag. Justin Simmons of Denver, Brandon Scherff of Washington. We talked about the LA Chargers. Hunter Henry's going to be on there. The Giants have designated Leonard Williams, Anthony Harris in Minnesota. Tampa Bay has Shaquille Barrett. So there's 11 players in all that will play on the franchise tag in the upcoming season. Dak Prescott, by far the highest profiled, I guess the highest ceiling for his particular position out of all of them. Now, with the deadline, it did not apply to Arizona's Kenyon Drake. He was the only player designated under the transition tag. He's permitted to negotiate with the Cardinals throughout the season. And so that's really what we're looking at for the NFL. It is an exciting day. It gives you a little bit of a glimpse in what the potential offseason of 2021 would look like. Big news. Derrick Henry re-ups with the Titans. No deal for Dak Prescott. That's a quick look at what is happening in the national sports scene. We're going to take a quick commercial break. Coming up, we're going to talk to Helper American Legion manager Dakota Cincinnatus. We'll talk Major League Baseball with Bill Lasky, and we'll give you an update on what the NJCAA season will look like for USU Eastern Sports in just a moment. Right here on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios.
There's no crying in baseball!
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things. Play ball!
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Holy cow!
Let's talk local baseball here on Drive Time Sports. Right now, the American Legion season. We're right in the thick of things. Round one of the state championship tournament took place this last Monday. Helper passed with flying colors, picking up two wins. And you can read the complete recaps of those games right now at CastleCountryRadio.com. We're going to talk about that and what's next for Helper. They'll return to the field on Friday. Joining us live in the studio right now, we have manager Dakota Cincinnatus. And Coach, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for having me in here. It's always great to be back.
Yeah, I always enjoy talking about the season, Coach. And I know it was kind of do or die for you guys this past Monday. You passed with flying colors, picking up two wins, dominating 14-1, and then also picking up a 2-0 win. You guys really worked it around that first game and then coasted, I guess we could say, in game two.
Yeah, we came out pretty hot in game one. I don't know if it was had anything to do with the heat of the day, but we were definitely hot, so we swung the bat pretty well, put up 14 runs, got out of there in five innings. Tyler Wright threw a great game on the mound for us for four innings, and then Rylan Hart closed that game out. And we just kind of kept their hitters off balance on the mound. But, yeah, we definitely swung the bat fairly well in that first game. And then, you know, I kind of tried to mix the lineup up a little bit in game two to give some guys a different chance so that they can see some at-bats heading into the state tournament. And our bats kind of cooled off. I think some of those guys not seeing an at-bat for a while and then jumping into a game there, we struggled a little bit. I think we only had four or five hits in that game. But, you know, we played really good defense. Jordan Wright pitched game two, and he threw a great game, complete game shutout. I think he only gave up two or three hits and had about nine strikeouts. So defensively, you know, we picked up the slack, you know, that we were lacking there on offense. But we got it done, got two wins against Mountain View and heading into the state tournament on Friday.
You said last week when we talked that you felt the kids had the right mindset going into the postseason. Was that true? I mean, going back and assessing Monday?
Yeah, I think we were definitely locked in. I you know, it wasn't an issue of, you know, our energy or our focus like it has been in the past with some of our games we've lost this season. I think we were there. We were mentally ready. We were locked in. We were ready to go. And these guys were excited to play. You know, it just was one of those days of baseball where, you know, we started off hot and then just kind of cooled off with our bats. So the mindset's definitely there. I think my team is ready to go. From what I could tell, they're all excited to be there, all excited to play. They were talking the entire game. Our intensity was there. So I definitely liked what I saw from the mindset and the approach that we had to the game, and I hope we can carry that over to Friday's game.
Talking about some of the individuals that stood out for you, Rylan Hart, I know, had a terrific first game. I mean, if it was in the box or if it was coming in a relief effort as well to pitch, Rylan was fantastic. And then Jordan Wright was phenomenal. Complete game shutout, also brought in a run as well in the batter's box. So those were two kids that really seemed to stand out for you on Monday.
Yeah. I mean, our game one, I thought everybody did a great job. But, yeah, Rylan definitely stood out. He swung the bat really well and just had a great approach all day. I think he was 3-for-4 in game one. I think he had like 5 RBIs and a triple. So, yeah, he was definitely locked in the batter's box. And then, yeah, threw great force on the mound. Just came in and pounded the zone and just threw fastballs by guys to get us out of the fifth inning and shut that game down. And then I believe he had a couple more hits in game two. And like you said, Jordan Wright, he pitched. He did a great job on the mound. But, yeah, he stepped in the box, had a couple hits for us and drove in a run, one of the two runs we scored. So, those two definitely stood out for us on the day. I thought everybody did a good job, you know, 1-9, but those two definitely came ready to play that day. And it was a great job by those two, but a great job by the rest of the team as well.
But you guys get to host these games, and I know the end of the regular season didn't necessarily go as planned. And it's a big deal in high school, but you do have some kids that will not be back next year due to age. And so is it a big deal for them? Was it a big deal for them to come back, get a couple of wins on their home field one last time?
It was. It was something that we talked about at the end of our regular season game, that game we lost to Wasatch at home. We weren't sure if it was going to be, you know, Braxton and Nathan, particularly their last game, playing out there in Helper, and it kind of left a bad taste in our mouth. So we were lucky that we got to host these games and give those two an opportunity to play again on that field and kind of go out on a high note. So it was something we talked about. It was something that, you know, I could tell they were bummed about after we lost to Wasatch. But then when I gave them the news that we were playing at home, hosting these games for the first round, everybody was pretty excited. I know some of those guys, you know, mentioned, you know, playing for those two and kind of sending them out the right way. So those two put in a lot of time. They've put in a lot of time in the Helper program. They put in a lot of time at the high school program. And they've dedicated a lot of years to baseball. So it was good to send them out the right way with two wins on Monday night. So, you know, that's something they can look back at and have some good memories with. So it was good to send them out the right way.
As far as home field goes, I know that this year has been so different. I mean, Price didn't field the team. I know there's been some squads throughout the state. I mean, if you look at attendance, it's been very, very low if anyone's been in the stands. What was that like this year at Helper? Were you happy with the amount of support that you guys garnered out there at the field?
Yeah, I was actually surprised. So once we heard, you know, that Price City wasn't allowing anybody to play on those Price City fields, me and my dad, we thought, you know, we better call Helper and see what kind of restrictions they're going to have. And When we called them, they really said, you know, we're not too worried about it. Go ahead and have the season as planned. Just do your best to try to, you know, keep people to do a little bit of distancing, make sure you've got some hand sanitizer stuff available for them. But right off the get-go, I mean, we've had packed stands almost every game. Our tournament back, you know, at the beginning of June was great. We had tons of people there for every game. And we've always, I mean, Helper Baseball's always been a big tradition, and we've always had tons of support, and it's just continued this year. You know, despite the virus, we've had people out there. You know, you would think it would just be people that have kids or relatives playing, but we've had our normal supporters out there, you know, other people from around the community that love to come out and watch baseball. And those stands are decent enough size that they can kind of, you know, get away. So they're not sitting on right on top of each other, but I've been definitely pleased with the support we've had from fans and family and everybody. So it's been great.
Dakota Cincinnatus, again, our guest right now, manager of the Helper American Legion baseball team. Coach, let's jump ahead. Friday, you guys will return to the field. We know you'll get a game Friday and Saturday. Now it's double elimination with the first round best two out of three series. Those are finished. So now we're down to 16 teams to decide the state champion. You guys climb one spot because it is reseeded. There was one upset during that first round. So you'll go in as the 13th seed and you'll take on Harriman. I got to be honest with you, and I'm not just saying this because you're sitting in front of me. Helper is a 13th seed. That's not your traditional 4 versus 13 matchup. I would assume Harriman probably is a little concerned about this matchup.
Yeah, I mean, that's something me and my dad were kind of laughing about. I don't know the last time that Helper went in as, you know, anything worse than maybe a 4-5 seed. So right. It's been a while. This summer, you know, it's been kind of an up and down roller coaster a little bit, trying to get some things figured out. And it's just been a weird summer with everything that's gone on with this virus. But yeah, it's definitely not your traditional, you know, 4-13 matchup. But I've told my kids, you know, the entire year, I don't really care who it is that we play. It just all depends on the way we show up and the way that we approach the game and, what we do as a team. You know, and Harriman's a team that put us out of the tournament last year. And I know their coach, really well. We're good friends. So I'm excited that we got Harriman to match up for game one. Hopefully we can get a little bit of redemption, and go take that game one from them. But yeah, it's definitely not your traditional matchup. It's definitely not your traditional helper season with that seeding. But I think we'll be okay. I think it'll be a good competitive game. I'm hoping that, you know, we can take one from Harriman there. So that's Friday, like you said, 12:30. That's at Pleasant Grove. If we win that game, we'll move on and play Saturday at Pleasant Grove at 3 p.m. If we lose that game, that first game, we're back at Juan Diego at 12:30. On Saturday. So hopefully we can just go take care of business and stay in the winner's bracket, make it easy on ourselves. But yeah, that's definitely a game that I'm looking forward to since Harriman put us out of the tournament last year. Hopefully we can go get that one from them.
Well, you have so much experience, be it a player or be it a coach, in tournaments like this. And I don't think you can stress enough just how important that first game is to pick up a win. It's not undoable, but it's highly unlikely to come back through that one loss bracket if you drop that first game. It's a lot of baseball in a very short period of time. I know that this is a team that would be equipped with it, knowing the amount of arms you have, but boy, a lot of emphasis always goes on round one in these types of tournaments.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you take that game one, you keep yourself in the winner's bracket, you play Saturday, you win that one, you play Monday, you win that one, you play Tuesday, and so on. So it's only single game if you win those, Saturday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, to be in the championship game. You know, if you lose that first game, you drop to the loser's bracket, you got to play Saturday, doubleheader Monday, doubleheader Tuesday, and then in order to win the championship, you have to win doubleheader Wednesday, and then if necessary, game on Thursday. So it's a lot of baseball if you drop down into that loser's bracket. You know, you mentioned from when I played, it's something that happened to us. We lost Wednesday, if I remember correctly, my last year, and dropped to the loser's bracket, and we had to play 36 innings in 2 days in order to win the state championship that year, and it was tough, but we did. We had the arms to do it, and we've got a lot of pitchers this year, so it's definitely something you want to avoid, but if needs be, I've got a lot of arms that can hopefully, you know, try to help us fight through that loser's bracket and get back into that championship game. But I would just assume we win and try to stay in that winner's bracket, in those winner bracket games, and just make it easy on ourselves.
You thought about who you're going to send out on the mound for game one?
I'm bouncing around a couple ideas. You know, I'd like to, you know, see maybe I think Wyatt Falk's done a great job for us this summer. Jordan Fawcett's had a couple arm issues over the course of the summer, but he's a great pitcher for us. You know, and then I've got a kid like Braxton Bennett, who's an older kid, has had experience, played in these type of games. And so I'm still trying to figure it out. It's something that I'm still working on, trying to work some lineup, trying to work a lineup to get put a lineup together and see where I need guys in some certain positions in order to fill that. So I'm not sure yet who I want to throw. But you can definitely probably you can probably bet it's going to be one of those three arms on the mound for us on Friday. So it'll be a hot day. I mean, you know, 12:30 game, that's going to be a hot game. So you know, I might take a couple different pitchers to get the job done, and whatever it takes, hopefully we can go get that first win and you know, like you said, make it easy on ourselves and stay in that winner's bracket.
No, well, the 19U tournament will continue on Friday. The 17U league is actually going on right now. And the good news for you is you'll have some of those kids from that 17U team available when you guys take the field on Friday. That was not the case on Monday as they were off battling in their own tournament. But by the time Friday rolls around, that 17U league will be complete.
Yeah, they've done a good job. They won their play-in game. I think we mentioned that last time I was in here. They beat Tooele. They ended up losing their game on Monday against Lone Peak, but they bounced back yesterday, had a great win. They won on a walk-off single in the seventh inning. So they've done a good job this week so far. They've been battling. They're playing down there in St. George, and you know, we know how hot St. George is this time of year. So getting some of those games in the middle of the day, it's kind of rough. But those kids have done a good job, and yeah, hopefully you know they can keep winning and extend their season. But I'd like, you know, hopefully we can have some of those kids back with us. I'm looking to have four or five of those kids back on Friday to give us a couple more arms in that. So that'll help. But yeah, those kids have done a good job. We've been trying to stay in touch with them while they've been down there, and it sounds like they've just been playing extremely hard, and I'm really proud of the way they've handled themselves and the way they've played this entire season.
Well, Coach, it's always fun to get you in. I know we'll catch up again with you here in the coming days to keep everyone updated on how the squad is doing. Best of luck as you guys travel to Pleasant Grove, and we'll talk again real soon.
Appreciate it. Thank you. It's always great to be in here.
We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. More baseball talk when we return. We'll flip it over and talk Major Leagues right here on Drive Time Sports. That's coming up next.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now a 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball! Deep to left field! Way, way back! It's gone!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Time for more baseball talk here on Drive Time Sports. We're getting down to it. We are 8 days away from opening day, and at this point, it seems like we are going to get a baseball season. I even had doubts once everything was set in stone, 60-game season. Rob Manfred had it mandated. I was a little skeptical, but now it looks like we are full set, ready to go 8 days from now. Joining us right now to talk about the Major League Baseball season and some of the storylines that have trickled through over the last week, we have Bill Lasky. Kind enough to join us every week, former Major League pitcher. Now he's an analyst for the San Francisco Giants. Bill, a pleasure as always. Thank you.
It's always a pleasure, Jordan. We've been doing this for years. It's a great conversation of baseball with you and all your listeners out there. And right now, as you said, 8 days away from the opening bell. Of course, here in San Francisco, it's going to be Clayton Kershaw against Johnny Cueto in L.A. Of course, the opener game is Scherzer against Cole, Washington against the Yankees. Some great TV the opening day on Thursday.
Yeah, we're going to have a great first week of baseball. I can't wait for it. And I'll tell you, Bill, I'm a little bit more intrigued, and I've said this for the last couple of years, one of my favorite teams to watch just from a young talent perspective, it is the Atlanta Braves. And I saw a story yesterday come trickling through where, I'm not going to call the writer out here on the show, but he didn't even have the Braves at his top 10 for most complete rosters. And I thought, that's insanity. When you take a look at what this team has front to back, both as positional players and from a pitching rotation standpoint, this team is dynamic. I think they're top two, top three in the National League. And then yesterday, they go out and they add Yasiel Puig. You want to talk about adding some sort of oomph to that lineup to replace Nick Markakis in the middle of July. Now, this is a perfect scenario for the Braves. And I go back to a conversation you and I had last year at the trade deadline. We both thought Bill, I went back and listened to the segment. We both thought that Atlanta should have made a play for Puig when Cincinnati made him available.
I agree, and I thought it was a great pickup for him. I mean, you and I both love the talent of Puig. There's no doubt about it. Strong arm, plays hard, swings the bat well, has power, a good defender, I believe, in the outfield, and he was off the shelf. He was nobody in spring training. He even gave him a shot. And we have always wonder how he is in the clubhouse, and I think that's one of the biggest question marks of any new team that he's bouncing around to. We thought he'd never be out of a Dodger uniform because he was so dominant there. And he's moved on. A few teams, we see it, but he's still got the talent. And what a great move by the Braves. I think that's going to bolster that lineup. And I'm with you. I think the Atlanta Braves are in the top five in my eyes, too, in Major League Baseball.
I agree. I mean, I love this lineup front to back. Then you take a look at what they have in the outfield. And I don't believe it matches up with the Dodgers, because when you have Cody Bellinger and Mookie Betts in the outfield, you have legitimately two of the top five players in the game of baseball. But when you look from left field to right field, and you have Acuna, Puig, and Inciarte, who can be a monster on the base pads, this is a legitimate outfield now in Atlanta.
I agree. And you got the good pitching staff, too, don't you? They got some guys that control the ball there. And, of course, they got Will Smith now as the closer there. He was here with the Giants and had some great years. So you're adding a few guys. Melanson's there, too. Two guys that I got to watch here pitch for several years, and they're both quality end guys as closers. And it's just going to see how these teams come out of the chute. We talk about 162 games being a marathon. Well, it's 60 games. It's a sprint. So each move these managers are making in these games are really crucial moves, and they don't have time to think about it. They have to win each game and win each series, and some of these series are four-game series. So it is going to be a test of knowledge, and as we talked last week, NL West against AL West, different mindset when you go against the American League, but don't forget, everybody's got a DH in that lineup now.
Yeah, I love what you just said a moment ago. You really have to put a focus on winning series now, right? Because over the course of a 162-game season, I think that gets lost. If you play a three-game set, you come out one, you know, you lose two out of the three, it's really not that big of a deal early on. Here, you have to put a focus on winning three of the four, splitting at the very minimum. You cannot come out on the short end of the stick when you go into a four-game set in a 60-game season.
Absolutely right. And when you're losing three out of four or even getting swept four out of four, the margin of error when you're looking in your divisions can quickly change. And you don't have enough time to speed up and catch up. You don't have another month. Oh, we'll catch them in 2 months from now. No, that ain't going to happen. And, you know, you're looking at a lot of these teams, the first 2 or 3 weeks have such a difficult schedule. You're either going to be challenging or you're going to be buried. And there's no doubt about it. You're going to see margins in these divisions, I would think, 10 games, 15 games, and because that's how many games you're going to lose, and you're going to have to contend with those top teams. And you and I both know those top teams in each division, they are strong from top to bottom. And now in the National League, adding another hitter in the lineup and taking a pitcher out, the Dodgers are going to be really strong. The Padres, when you start looking at the NL West, each team's going to have another top quality hitter in that lineup daily.
Yeah, and I think if you look at Arizona, you could take a kid like Jake Lamb, for instance, who maybe isn't the most sure thing in the field, but he's a kid that can hit 240 to 250 and bat with power. That's another dynamic that I don't think is getting enough pub. You have a lot of players, a Jock Peterson in LA. The Dodgers tried to be creative with him last year. You don't have to be creative with him right now if you want his batting power. Just put him as a DH.
And you never know, Jordan, where they're going to put the DH. You might have him in a 7-8-9 hole. You don't know, because if you're generating these lineups daily and you got Bellinger, Mookie Betts, you got a lot of these top-quality guys, they want to stay in that position. They want to stay in that 3-hole. They want to stay in the 4-5 hole. They don't want to move around because it's mindset, knowing who's in front of me, knowing who's behind me. And then you get that set lineup. And who knows, you might have the DH in the ninth spot because all these guys are such good players. Some of these teams might use the ninth spot for speed. So you might have a DH like a number one guy. So now you have 9-1-2 come around. These managers and these baseball operation guys are going to be very creative with the roster they have, because a lot of these rosters have a lot of young prospects that should be in AA or AAA. And they may be a pinch runner. They may be a pinch hitter. but they're getting them the confidence to play at the big leagues, and that's the main thing.
Bill Lasky, again, our guest right now, former big league pitcher, as we talk Major League Baseball. Bill, I was watching an intra-squad game last night, and Walker Buehler of the Dodgers goes two innings. Today, Jacob DeGrom he is removed from an intra-squad game after one inning due to back tightness. And so I'm looking at a kid like Walker Buehler, who I have extremely high hopes for this season. We're talking about Jacob DeGrom, who won the NL Cy Young Award the past two seasons, and we're only seeing one or two innings from these guys. Is it more precautionary, or are these guys simply just not ready to go at this stage?
I believe every team is going to do pitch counts. I think they have plateaus that they want to get to, 30, 40, 50 pitches, and then start moving up a little bit from there. Just like a normal spring training when these guys go out, you know, once and then they get 4 days off. They'll go out twice, 4 days off. They're trying to build stamina. They're trying to build arm strength. Every arm's going to go through a dead period. It's a normal thing. But I don't know how many of these pitchers in the time when they were home got to throw off a mound. They might have played catch in a driveway or whatever, but, you know, ballparks were closed. High school fields were closed. They might have been thrown inside off one of those rubber mounds, but we don't know how many guys got to literally throw, and did they throw quality pitches. So I think when they all came back, once COVID-19 let them come back, I think each player or each pitcher had an opportunity to throw bullpens and might have told a pitching coach and some other baseball ops, I didn't get to throw that much in the last 3 weeks. So the mindset goes back, okay, we got to start them off slowly. And I think that's what you're going to see in a lot of these teams. You might only have starters go two or three innings, and then the middle guy comes in that could be that fifth, sixth starter. So I think you're going to have bridges in these games where the starter goes three or four, then you got a middle guy that's going to go a couple innings, and then it goes to the bullpen. It's going to be creative by these managers and pitching coaches to see how they're going to push some of these big-name starters and how long they're going to go. And again, it's not about going 80 pitches today. It's going to be how you're going to feel in 2 days, and are you going to have a setback because you might be stiff or sore. So these are all things that all the pitching coaches will be watching, you know, continually doing pitch counts, continually asking them how they feel, how your arm is. And that's where the trainers can tell them if they're stiff or sore. There's two different unique things when you pitch. Either you're sore where you can't pick up your arm and it's kind of really tight, or is it stiff where I can do exercises through bands or a trainer can stretch me and I get loose by playing catch. Two things pitchers always have to look at.
Bill, let's move on and talk about the World Series champion Washington Nationals. About 2 weeks ago, Ryan Zimmerman opts out of the season. Not a huge deal for the Nationals, although that's a veteran leader within the clubhouse. Obviously, that voice will be missed. But through all the camps, Juan Soto hasn't been there. Victor Robles hasn't been there. Howie Kendrick, who is going to take on even a more extended role with Zimmerman gone, has not been in attendance. The report comes out now that Juan Soto should report tomorrow, but we don't know about Robles. We don't know about Kendrick at this stage in the game. How big of an issue is it for a player to miss this amount of time when everything is compact anyways? Or do you expect Dave Martinez to just throw Juan Soto, Victor Robles, and Howie Kendrick out as starters day one? I mean, what type of preparation would a position player need at this stage?
I think I go right back like the pitchers. How much hitting did they do? I know Buster Posey opted out here the other day. He's not going to participate in a 60-game season. And he was saying before the only thing he got to do is hit off a tee. Now, of course, a tee, you can still do a lot of swing pass and things like that, but you're not going against live pitching. I don't know what these guys have been doing in that layoff. If they haven't done anything, there's no way they're going to throw them right in there next Thursday, opening day. It's impossible. Maybe getting them a bat, maybe pinch hit, and see how comfortable they are. Each player's different. We all know that, Jordan. Each situation is different. The opportunity of each guy might say, hey, I'm ready. I'm physically ready. I'm ready to go. But you can't test that because one leg injury, you're out almost 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and guess what? You only got 60 games. So they do have to be precautionary in some matters, but at the other time, they got to get those guys out there. They're key members in that lineup.
Bill Lasky, our guest right now. Bill, we're going to step away from the game of baseball, the major league game of baseball here for a moment, but you have something cooking up that is extremely unique, and I know you've been hard at work at this for a little while, and now that it's ready to go, we can actually talk about it on air. You have a nice little business adventure that has now popped up.
Well, thanks, Jordan. I appreciate you letting me talk about it. It's called BigLeagueCoaching.pro. And what I did, I got together with some of my friends that have been big league coaching with me, and they've had a great history of coaching in the minor leagues at the big league level. Some players that are in this is Joel Youngblood. He was 18 years as an Arizona Diamondback traveling hitting coach and outfielder instructor. Mark Davis, a Cy Young winner back on the Padres. He is now the Kansas City Royal minor league coordinator for pitching. Gary Davenport, the great late Jim Davenport's son, over 20 years as an infielder instructor. Brian Harper, who was a World Series champion with the Minnesota Twins, was a catching instructor for over 10 years in the minor leagues. And Eric Ortega, who's been a strength and conditioning coach or trainer with the San Francisco Giants for 15 years. And we kind of did a roundtable discussion about all the knowledge of these guys and how we can teach. So we made a nice little company called BigLeagueCoaching.pro, and what we've done is we've developed videos, 45 minutes to an hour videos, that really break down what we talk about from outfield, infield, different drills, different mindset, to conditioning, from shoulders to legs to hips, the oblique, and then we go to pitching grips from Mark Davis and myself, different grips, how do you throw the pitch. Then we get into preparation, mindset, physical conditioning, and what you do between starts. And as a reliever like Mark, what you do daily, different ways to improve your arm, strengthening your arm, making you throw a fastball a little bit harder, different exercises with bands and small weights. But what we did is we just more or less diagnosed baseball through the mindset of a big leaguer. And we have all played in the big leagues and successful big league careers, and now we want to teach it. I went online one day back in February, and I looked, big leaguers, and there was nothing out there. It was a lot of college coaches, high school coaches, and don't get me wrong, they're great teachers. But when you listen from big leaguers that have played the game and was successful and now coached in the game, and I said over 15 years, every guy is over 25 years of experience from a player or a coach. And you listen to how they teach, the mindset, and how they have confidence in how they speak. There's no reason why a player or a coach doesn't learn from these videos. Very easy access to get to the site, BigLeagueCoaching.pro. We have Appointments Plus. Join Appointments Plus. You don't have to buy anything. But what you do once you get to that page, join Appointments Plus, you will see the breakdown of all these classes. On the website under pricing, hit calendar. You can see all these videos that we are talking about each day. We change them daily, and we teach daily. These videos are on from 9 in the morning till 9 at night. You can join and just jump on anywhere. You'll have a video placement right on your computer, and you'll be able to watch it for 45 minutes to an hour. We also do personal lessons, a little pricey, but at the same time, you're going to get a one-on-one with a big leaguer who's going to kind of instruct you on some of the things you need to do to improve your game. But I really encourage your listeners and your followers, especially coaches and players, take a look, BigLeagueCoaching.pro, and get online and see what we have to offer.
It's great stuff. Great stuff from Bill Lasky, again, our guest here on Drive Time Sports. Bill, before I let you go, where the listeners can find more of you?
Well, I'll be on KNBR on Saturdays and Sundays, starting that first weekend. Well, I'll be doing the post-game show. It's called Extra Innings with Bill Lasky. You can always go on KNBR 680, take a peek, take a listen, and listen to me 2 hours after Saturdays and Sundays. We're breaking down the games. And, of course, I'm looking forward to that first weekend against the Dodgers. And it's a four-game series, and Saturday and Sunday should be excellent baseball like the first two. But I'm excited, Jordan, just as you are, baseball starting. And, of course, you can always see me on Twitter at Lasky19. But, again, Jordan, thank you again for letting me talk about BigLeagueCoaching.pro, and I'm hoping your listeners will take a peek at it and join us. And it's a great baseball instructional website.
No question. No question about it. Bill, look forward to the conversation next week. Thank you.
Thanks, Jordan. I appreciate it again. Hello.
We'll take a quick commercial break. We have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return live from the Auto Farm Studios.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
We're back to close out this edition of Drive Time Sports. Fun show today, catching up with Bill Lasky and also getting an update on the Helper American Legion baseball team. More of that still to come. Again, we'll keep tabs on Helper throughout the remainder of the season as they are now in the state championship tournament. That'll resume Friday against Harriman's team that knocked them out of the state tournament last year. So more of that coming up later on in the week. Tomorrow on Drive Time Sports, we are going to catch up with USU Eastern women's basketball coach Chelsea Warburton. We have been following USU Eastern, highlighting one specific team each week over the last month and a half. And we'll get into the USU Eastern women's basketball team tomorrow. A lot happening at the JUCO level. A lot of questions that need to be answered, right? What's the schedule going to look like? I couldn't imagine being a coach at this particular time because you have international players that you have to get into the country. Now you have to rework your entire schedule. I mean, this goes across the board. If we're talking soccer, volleyball, basketball, times have got to be insane, especially at the JUCO level because you have such a quick turnaround. Right? You go from having 10 sophomores one season to having 10 freshmen the next. It's not like at the four-year level. It's completely different. So I'm looking forward to that interview. Chelsea Warburton will join us on the show tomorrow. And of course, we'll continue to talk national sports as we get a little bit closer to opening day for Major League Baseball and resuming the NBA season. We are 15 days away. Tomorrow will be the two-week mark where we get the Lakers and the Clippers as part of the opening night startup. The Jazz are back in action that night as well against New Orleans. So a lot still to get into. We'll resume those talks tomorrow here on Drive Time Sports. Do not forget, you can listen to Drive Time Sports live on demand at CastleCountryRadio.com. I'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place. Be safe. I am out.